Chapter 6. Incremented Destruction. Cascade. Send this word. Battleship Ironblood, Transuranic Gulf. The flames of battle stretched from the Elysian Gate towards the orbits of Uranus like the arm of a jeweled god. The Daughter of Woe hung over the gate itself, a new and ugly false moon amongst the planet's true children. Uranus's defences fired on it without cease. Explosions burst on the Space Hulk's surface. Shreds of its substance puffed into the void like dust exploding from raindrops. It had no guns to fire back on its tormentors, but the ships that orbited it spoke in its stead. Rolling barrages of missiles and macro shells streamed from them, and behind it, shielded by its bulk, more and more ships dropped through the hole in reality. In the 3 days since the first ship had breached the Elysian Gate, the battle for Uranus had spread across its orbit. The outer circles of the planet's defences had fallen within 18 hours of the first shots being fired, but since then the assault had slowed. Now the fight was for the hundreds of stations, moons and habitats, from the Mechanicum outpost Tau-16-1, which hung like a black needle in low orbit, to the ancient Cadmon station, its geodesic sphere pitted by millennia of dust impacts. Each of the planet's 7 moons held small clouds of their own void stations, and untold billions of humans lived in these scattered islands of life and air. Assault groups waded through fire to hack and burn their way into stations and habitats. Torpedoes and munitions shot into orbit to plough hours-long paths into their targets. So far, the defenders had retained their dominance, but day by day the attacking forces grew. Stations died or fell, and the sphere of Uranus bled flames without cease. Defence forces counterattacked, taking back stations while they were still burning with the fires of their first defeat. The vast bronze and plasteel star of the Cinderfell dynastic enclave had changed hands 3 times in as many days. The moon of Umbriel swung across the sunward edge of Uranus as the 4th day of battle began. Armoured habdomes dotted its craters, and tethered gun bastions hung in its airless skies. A quartet of assault carriers detached from the Daughter of Woe and boosted towards the emerging moon. Layered in armour and void shields, their hulls groaned with troops suckled from the guts of the Hulk. A pair of battlecruisers fell in beside the quartet of carriers, and the 4th Legion strike cruiser, Aeschylus, dropped into the lead of the formation. A group of 6 warships lay across their path. Smaller than the traitor cruisers and assault carriers, they were Legion ships, 4 of the Imperial Fists and 2 of the Blood Angels. Their troop complements had been stripped to garrison terror, but their commanders were still some of the finest void warriors in the Imperium, their crews trained and drilled to Legion standards. They began to fire, moving and rolling in the void as they closed with the oncoming enemy. Torpedoes surged from the prows of the attackers. Squadrons launched from the defenders' ships to tear the warheads from the void. Lance beams danced over the assault group's shields. The 6 Loyalist craft accelerated, their guns singling out an assault bark. The ship listed, its belly crawling with flame, skeins of oily energy stuttering around its hull as its shields failed to light. In its holds, 100,000 soldiers, taken from the grey worlds of the Kaeus Belt, became ash as plasma vented from cracked conduits. Fire crisscrossed the void as Umbriel's defence turrets targeted the oncoming torpedoes. Explosions ringed the small moon. Then the Nova shell struck it. Fired from a bombardment cruiser far out of the battlesphere, it had been time to strike just at this moment. Primed with a haywire generator and thousands of scrap signal initiators, it burst on Umbriel's surface. Clouds of distorting energy and ghost Auspex signals fogged the defence sensors just as they locked on to incoming torpedoes. Graviton and haywire warheads struck Umbriel moments later. Crushing gravity fields yanked the moon's tethered bastions out of alignment and cracked the shells of surface habitats. The strike was not decisive, but it made Umbriel's defences blink. And that was enough. A stutter in the deluge of fire from the guns. A split second's pause, and the assault carriers began to shed breaching pods like seeds from ripe cornheads. Their warship escorts came about to meet the six defenders head-on. Gunships cut through the void around growing thunderheads of burning gas. Their targets were the gun platforms tethered to the moon. Those craft that struck true poured troops into the guts of the moon's bastions. Corridors lit with gunfire. One bastion detonated its magazines, and the fire-scattered night was dotted with a brief new star. Forex watched the data strand from the Umbriel assault for a single second more, then let it dissolve back into the tide of symbols and numerals that cascaded before his sight. Across the entire sphere of the battle, Umbriel was but one amongst dozens of assaults, amongst hundreds of engagements, where counting losses on either side in anything less than thousands was meaningless. As first captain and chief logistician of the Iron Warriors, he had lived every second of this operation as simulations spooled through the Iron Blood's cogitators. The reality, even seen in the cold flow of symbols and numerals, was breathtaking. Nearly 4,000 primary-grade warships had already exited the warp from the Elysian Gate, pouring into the Transuranic Gulf. They had paid for every kilometre advanced, but they had the coin in ships and firepower. They had pushed and pushed forwards, spreading out and advancing on the defenders, not at a burning charge, but slowly, inexorably, like the erosion of mountains by ice. And just as mountains inevitably became dust, so this victory was assured. That was one of the things that made it beautiful. Forex's current role was to control and marshal the forces still exiting the warp. That alone was a monumental task. For all the power they had brought to this battle already, there were still twice as many ships waiting in the Immaterium. Normally, many of them would have been carried away in an etheric riptide, or assaulted by neverborn creatures by now. But while storms were churning the warp, they had not touched the ships that came to make war under the light of the sun. The gods and their demons, for even Forex had begun to call them that, held back their hunger and spite from the warriors of the Warmaster. Forex heard the low click of pneumatics and looked to where Perturabo, Primarch of the Iron Warriors, stood at the centre of the Strategium. Pistons and layers of armour whirred as his gaze moved to a different cascade of hololithic symbols. "The condition update from the assault on Pluto is overdue," said the Primarch.
"Analysis of the battle light from its orbits indicates an engagement on a larger scale than we predicted," said Forex.
"Than Axamand predicted," said Perturabo.
"He still has enough main force to deploy that he should achieve domination within the required time."
When Perturabo did not respond, Forex said,
"Something troubles you, my lord?"
The Primarch turned his gaze on Forex.
"So far, each of the strategic projections has held true. The intelligence from the 20th Legion has proven accurate, and where tactical reality is different, it is predictably so. The moving of main fleet forces from Neptune to Uranus, the lacing of the Plutonic Gulf with additional munitions, all of it is within a narrow band of cautiousness. We progress as we intended, and they respond as predicted. Everything is as predicted."
"You mean that there's something wrong with a plan that is executed as intended?"
Perturabo was silent for a long moment. The plan for the assault of the solar system was many things, but chiefly it was the creation of Horus and Perturabo, bound with Magnus the Red's semi-corporeal ghost of insight. It was a work of inhuman genius, a battle plan that existed not only in the four dimensions of time and space, but also in the realm of the warp. And Perturabo had been the architect of the opening moves. Even in abstract, to wield forces on the scale involved had taxed Forex's abilities. But the Lord of Iron had alloyed force and time and space into a strategy that would take the Chthonic and Elysian gates in days. It was direct, incremental, and irresistible. War as bloody art. But now, looking at the smooth fit between reality and theory, Forex saw the flaw.
"It should not be so clean," he said. "The defenders fight hard and make us pay, but they do nothing that we have not anticipated."
"My brother," said Perturabo softly, his eyes still on the flow of data, "is many things, and his flaws were always hidden by the praise heaped on him. Call him steadfast, and that is merely a lacquer given to blunt unreason. Loyalty in him is merely a need to belong. Nobility is the gilding to base pride."
Forex held himself still. He had not heard Perturabo talk of Rogel Dorn directly in years.
"But the one thing my brother is not, is a fool."
Perturabo lapsed into silence. Forex did not know what to say. The Lord of Iron remained silent as the data of the battle danced on the black orbs of his eyes.
"Continuous planned," he said at last. "Bring the lost sons through the gate."
Freighter ship Antius, Uranus high orbit.
"Transmit again," said Vec. "Make it clear it is for the primary overseer."
"There's no response, sir," replied the signal officer. The woman glanced up at Vec and then down at her instruments.
"Try again,"
snapped Vec, then caught himself and raised a placating hand.
"Try again," he said,
and turned away, running a hand over his face. He closed his eyes for a second, saw the bubbles of colour blossom briefly behind his eyelids. His hand was shaking. He should sleep. But for the love of all that was precious, how would he be able to? His hand strayed to where the small pendant had hung around his neck for these last few years, hidden from other eyes. It stopped and dropped to his side. The pendant was not there. Somehow, in the panic to get off Cordelia, it must have broken and fallen to the floor. This was what? The 10th time in as many days that he had reached for the small golden Aquila? He found himself trying to remember the words of the prayers that his wife had taught him. She had been the reason he had kept the pendant, just as she was the reason he had joined the quiet faith of the Lectitio Divinitatis. She had been the reason he had done a lot of things.
"Transmitting on all available frequencies," said the signal officer.
Vec nodded but did not look around. He should go and sleep. How long had it been? A day? Two? More? It had taken that long to drop over the arc of Uranus to its sunward side. Colne had danced them on a jinking path while the battle spread in silent flashes behind them. The destruction had yet to reach this hemisphere of the planet's orbits, but chaos had run ahead of the fighting. Ships crowded towards every moon and habitat, clamouring for shelter, for help, for anything that they thought would shield them from harm. The Antius had made for Oberon and its girdle of refinery and ore processing plants. Fewer ships had fled here. It was further out, and its pipes and industrial platforms offered less obvious sanctuary compared with Titania's city warrens and belts of defence stations. But its approaches still swarmed with craft trying to get close, trying to dock, trying to get the attention of the moon's rulers. The Antius had to correct its course minute by minute, just to keep from colliding with other craft. Vec had connections on Oberon, good connections that had proved true even when things went wrong. It seemed now that those past alliances counted for little when the heavens were ablaze.
"Still no response, sir," said the signal officer. "I can't even tell if they're..."
The signal officer broke off. Lights had sparked across her consoles, and parchment had begun to spool from a data transcriber.
"What is it?" asked Vec.
"Officer of the watch," she called.
The alternate submaster that Colne had left in charge started forwards, but Vec snapped out his question again.
"What is it?"
The officer looked around at him, blinking. There was a fog in her half-focused eyes.
"Terra's packed, but she's exhausted," realised Vec.
"We are being hailed, Master Vec," said the officer.
Her hands were shaking as she peered down into the flickering green screens in front of her.
"By Oberon governance?" asked Vec.
No, it's a military transmission. From a warship.
Her voice trailed off. Vec went still.
What does...
he began.
They are requesting confirmation of our report that we picked up a prisoner adrift in the void. They want us to confirm that she is alive.
Where is the ship?
Asked Vec, before the duty officer could ask.
I don't know. Close, I'd guess, to have picked us out.
Vec rubbed his hands over his forehead. This could be a chance. They needed to dock at Oberon, unload the hundreds of souls in their holds. Maybe he could even use this to barter transport for him and the children to Saturn or the Inner System.
Confirm and respond that we will hand the prisoner over in dock at Oberon. Ask them to follow us in.
The signal officer blinked at him, then at the watch officer, who looked relieved that someone other than him had decided. The signaller began to key controls.
Stop!
The call came from the doors to the bridge. Vec turned as Axinia vaulted up the stairs onto the helm platform. His life ward's face was flushed, her eyes wide.
Do not transmit!
What?
Began Vec.
Don't transmit that signal!
Called Axinia, striding forwards. But the signal officer was keying her controls with fatigue-narrowed focus. Axinia leapt towards the officer, but the distance was a fraction too far, and the officer's hand pulled the transmission lever a fraction of a second before Axinia yanked the woman's hand back. The officer let out a yelp of pain. Axinia looked down at her for a moment, breathing hard. Then she turned to Vec and grabbed his arm.
Sir, you have to come with me now,
she hissed, just below the hearing of everyone but him. The bridge crew were looking around, puzzlement blending with the exhaustion on their faces.
Why?
He said, trying to pull his arm free as Axinia shoved him towards the bridge's main exit.
Why would they want to confirm whether the prisoner is alive? Why, in all that is happening, would they seek us out to make sure?
Vec felt the blood in his limbs become ice. He could see the great bulk of another freighter through the pitted armour glass of the viewport. So close it appeared you could have jumped from one to the other. He opened his mouth. Macro shells struck the freighter beyond the viewport and tore it into shreds of metal and tatters of flame.
Listen to me,
Mercedes shouted at the door.
I need to speak to your master. He needs to speak to me.
The door remained shut.
They won't listen,
said Nihilus.
Think about it. They have no reason to, and every reason to think that talking to an escaped prisoner might be a very bad idea.
She did not reply, but looked at the door. Nihilus shifted from where he sat in the corner of the chamber and poked at the single bowl of broth the guard had brought.
There has to be a way to make them listen.
To what?
Asked Nihilus, looking up from the bowl.
What are you going to tell them? You haven't even told me why you need to get Rogel Dorn, and we have the bond of mutual suffering. And now this rather inadequate cell to share.
She glanced at the navigator, but he had gone back to stirring the broth suspiciously. She had woken to find Nihilus curled up in the corner of the cell. It wasn't a proper brig, just a small storage space by the look of it. The crew of the freighter had ripped out the inner locking mechanism and sealed them in with a bowl of broth and a plastic jug of water that tasted like metal and dust. She had slept in spite of herself, exhaustion overriding fear and uncertainty. Mercifully, she had not dreamed. This had been the first time she and Nihilus had spoken to each other since they had reached the Antaeus. Given the breathless scramble to escape the prison ship, it was also, she realised, the first time they had ever really talked at all.
It's all right, he said. You can keep your secrets. I'm sure you have more than a few.
He paused, then glanced up at her. Eyes sharp and wary.
You were the Remembrancer, weren't you?
Mercedes stiffened, cautious.
I was a Remembrancer,
she replied after a moment, then folded her legs to sit on the floor.
There were a lot of us.
But I recognised your name.
You were well known. A bit famous, even, yeah? You and, what was her name? The Imagist? Keela.
She said, the name heavy in her mouth.
Euphrati Keeler. That was it. You were both quite the thing, weren't you? That was our job,
she said, and shrugged.
to see the great crusade for people who would never be able to see it. He smiled, the expression a crooked twist to his mouth. But I remember the talk. You got close to the heart of things. Very close. Practically a step away from the War Master. She blinked, and a door slamming open, followed by heavy metal-on-metal footsteps. Mercedes knew it was a space marine even before the impossibly huge shadow fell over her. She turned to see a shadowy form behind her, robed in a cream tunic edged with sea-green trim. The War Master's equerry, Malaghurst, was known as the Twisted, as much for his labyrinthine mind as the horrible injuries that had broken his body and left him grotesquely malformed.
"Loken," he said. "These are civilians."
"I can vouch for them," said Loken. Malaghurst turned his eyes to her. She shivered. Nihlus was watching her, the oily black of his whiteless eyes glittering above his crooked smile.
"Why were you in the Nameless Fortress?" she asked him.
"Was that what they called it?"
he snorted.
"How very predictable the methods of oppression become."
He shook his head and took another spoon of broth.
"Where was it?"
"Titan, I think," she replied.
"But here we are, somewhere off Uranus, hoping somehow that this bucket of rust doesn't catch a shell in one of the biggest void engagements in history."
"They were taking us somewhere," said Mercedes. "For whatever reason, they decided to move us. When the invasion started, they must have decided..."
"To kill us all rather than let such a dangerous set of prisoners fall back into the hands of the enemy,"
he laughed.
"They thought very highly of us all."
He shook his head and stabbed his spoon at the surface of the grey broth.
"Why were you a prisoner, Nihlus?"
asked Mercedes again, after a moment.
"Why were any of us? Why are we alive, here and now? Wrong place, wrong time."
He laughed again, the sound hollow and high.
"You actually want to know?"
She nodded.
"I was a navigator on board a warship," he said, and shrugged. "Not even the prime navigator. But that ship was called the Acontia, and it was part of the 63rd Expeditionary Fleet," she finished.
He nodded.
"Indeed. One of the Imperial Army vessels honoured by the War Master to accompany him to war. An honour that does not bring kindness to its crew or navigators when they fall into the hands of the Emperor's loyal servants."
He spoke the last words through bared teeth.
The ship fled to the solar system?"
"Hardly," he said. "The officers mutinied after Istvan. Half of the military commanders and units on board were die-hard Horus loyalists. But the captain and the other half wanted nothing to do with it. They came to us, to the navigators, saying that they needed our help to get out. And we agreed. My house does not like this war, nor any part of it or any side of it. So when we can remove ourselves from it, we do."
He paused and shivered. Mercedes found herself wondering what could make a creature that looked out on the immaterium afraid.
"The next time we translated into the warp, we took the ship off course," said Nihlus eventually. "The diehards were supposed to be dealt with then, but they lived up to that title. It became a battleground inside the ship. Storms came and something else too. By that point, we were lost on the tides, rolled by the storm. So dumped us back out into reality. And here we were, within touching distance of the light that shines on Terra. They, the ones that found us, killed the rest of the crew, I think. Clean sweep, fire, and screams."
"But they kept you alive," said Mercedes.
"Yeah,"
he said, looking at her with his midnight eyes.
"Don't ask me why."
The side of his mouth twitched up in a smile. The expression somehow made her feel colder.
"And you, Mercedes Oliton, remembrancer and friend to the sons of Horus, what happened to you? And why do you think you need to speak to the Praetorian of Terra?"
She shivered. Behind her eyes, she saw a wolf rising from black water under a sickle moon.
She began. "You said to the masters of this ship that you needed to reach Terra. Forgive me if I'm curious as to why you want to speak to Rogel.
Nihlus broke off, and his head twitched around, his gaze flicking between the corners of the room. The broth tumbled to the floor as he came to his feet.
"Something's happening,"
he said, breathing hard.
"Something's..."
And the lights blinked out as the world began to shake. Vec opened his eyes. Light and sound filled the bridge. Explosions lit in the view beyond the viewports. Pieces of metal blasted outwards from the first ship struck and caught another ship's engine cowlings as it passed close by. They tore like parchment in a shot cannon blast. The ship began to skid across the void. The Antaeus rocked. Cracks pinged across the viewports as a wave of micro-debris broke over them.
"Damage!"
someone was shouting.
"Where?"
Vec shouted back.
I don't know. Port? Find out!"
Vec began to push himself up. The deck pitched, and he slammed back down onto the metal. He could taste blood in his mouth. A thin hand with a grip like a machine closed on his arm and hoisted him up. He looked up at Axinia.
"Sir, you need to come with me."
"What is happening?"
Cole shouted as she pulled herself up the stairs onto the helm platform. The brevet captain was pale, eyes wide, bordering on panic.
"Why?"
stammered the watch officer. Beyond the viewports, the ship with the shredded engines hit a smaller ship prow on. A new blaze of light blanked the night.
"Full astern!"
shouted Colne.
30 degrees down angle! Do it now!"
The Antaeus began to judder as its engines and thrusters pushed it back and down, away from the expanding cloud of destruction. Vec shook his head. His thoughts were racing, putting together the pieces that he hadn't seen at first.
"They fired on us, didn't they? Those shells were meant for us."
"They missed,"
said Axinia, trying to pull him away.
"But the warship that fired is still out there, and the odds are low that it will make the same mistake twice."
"The prisoner,"
he said.
"They checked that the prisoner was still alive before they fired."
He shook himself free of Axinia's grasp.
"Get the children to a shuttle," he said. "Be ready to launch if we get hit."
"Sir, you need to..."
"I'm going to speak to her now. If we are going to be killed by our own side, I want to know why."
Mercedes was banging on the cell door again. There was blood on her knuckles.
"Listen to me,"
she shouted.
"You need to listen to me."
She roared. A pit of anger was opening in her now. She had accepted her fate long ago. She saw the consequences of her years spent with the 16th Legion and could not fault the judgment of the Imperium. It was the price for the truth of what had happened to Horus, what had happened to everything. Except now, there was something more important, just as there had been all those years ago when she and the other survivors of the Eisenstein had brought Dawn the news of the War Master's treachery. It felt so much the same. But this time, she was the only messenger.
"That's a blast wave vibration,"
said Nihlus. He was crouched in the corner of the room, legs drawn up. His head was raised, eyes darting around the walls as sounds clanged from spot to spot. He was breathing hard, sweating.
"Ships like this have no shields. If someone tries to shoot a hole in it, we're not going to last long."
Mercedes raised her hand to strike the door again. The locks disengaged with a clang, and the doors swung outwards. The rotund man with the polished skin and opal-dotted forehead stood in the space beyond. A guard stood with him, hands twitching on a lasgun.
"What have you brought down on us?"
said the man. There was fear in his eyes, but anger in his voice. A booming shudder ran through the metal walls and floor. The guard flinched.
"What is happening?"
asked Mercedes.
"Someone is trying to kill us to get to you."
Mercedes stared at him.
"I was a prisoner," she began.
"People don't kill ships to execute one prisoner,"
he growled, biting off the next words.
"What have you done?"
"I..."
she said, and then stopped, calm replacing confusion. She looked at him levelly.
"It's not what I did. It's who I was. Who I knew."
"Your name,"
he murmured, stepping back, looking at her with the light of realization in his eyes.
"Oliton. In the Great Crusade before the war, I heard your name. Reports from the front, you..." You were a remembrancer.
A remembrancer to the sons of Horus, she said simply. To the armies of Horus.
By the throne's grace,
hissed the man, stepping back, eyes wide. Another rumble shook the hull.
They aren't just trying to kill you. They're trying to kill us. They're trying to kill us because we have talked to you.
The guard who had been listening raised his gun, finger fumbling at the trigger. The big man slammed the barrel down just before the guard fired. The guard struggled, but the big man pulled the gun out of his hand and shoved the guard back.
She's death,
gasped the guard.
She's killed us all.
I can help, said Mercedes, as the man turned back to her. I think I can save you, save us. But I need to get away from here. I need to
reach the Praetorian, said the man.
How do you even begin to have a reason for that?
Because I need to tell him something that may save everything that he is fighting for. The man looked at her. The guard had hauled himself to his feet. He does not have any reason to believe me, she thought. And then a phrase he had used rose in her mind, clear and bright. Throne's grace.
How could...
Because I am carrying a message from a saint, she said. From a friend. From someone called Euphrates Keeler. The man looked at her, mouth half open, not blinking.
And you can help, he said.
And she could see the hope rising behind the fear.
You can protect us.
Maybe, she said. But not if we die now. In the dry poetry of the Voidborn, this manner of disaster was called a fire cascade. One ship exploded, and the debris was catapulted out as shrapnel. The debris struck another ship in close proximity, which exploded in turn, and then its debris destroyed another, and another. The disaster leaping from one victim too many to countless multitudes in a few bounds. It was a rare event. The vast distances involved in void manoeuvres saw to that. But the ships navigating the approach channels around Uranus's moon Oberon were very close to each other. So close that several catastrophes had already been avoided by the narrowest margins. When the first ship exploded, the fire cascade followed within moments. Wreckage flew out on silent waves of flaming gas. Pieces of torn metal the size of tanks struck unshielded hulls and punched through. Fuel lines ruptured. Promethium met plasma and roared out, ripping and burning. Hundreds died, gasping for breath, as billows of fire stole the air from where they slept or stood or crouched in the arms of those they loved. Seared to dust and ash in superheated infernos, tumbled into the vacuum. On and on the cascade ran, seeded from one explosion into another. Thousands died, cut apart by shearing metal, shot through by grains of debris flung through hulls in 100-meter-wide shot blasts. Hundreds of thousands died, spinning over and over in the torn chunks of their ships. Shockwaves spun the Antaeus as it turned and tried to run to the edge of the spreading cloud of death. Its engines fired, cut out, and then slammed it forwards as a piece of hull the size of a Titan blasted through the space it had just vacated. Sound roared through the Antaeus's bridge. Crew shouted, some asking for orders, others just screaming. The hull groaned. Alert gongs boomed in spaces beneath the deck plates. Lights blinked constellations of crimson and amber across every machine. Vec caught the edge of the stairs to the helm platform as he hauled himself up. Mercedes was in front of him. Somehow she was calm, almost serene, as though she had seen this face of existence before and looked on it with familiarity. Vec turned as they reached the top. Submistress Colne saw Mercedes and lunged for a sidearm clamped to the side of the helm console.
No!
Snapped Vec, moving between Colne and Mercedes.
We should shoot her and dump her into the void!
Snarled Colne. Her eyes were bloodshot, the gun barrel shaking in her hand. Mercedes had stopped, her eyes wide as they took in the strobing fire beyond the viewports.
"She can help us live," said Vec.
Another blossom of flame opened in the near void.
"She caused this,"
roared Colne.
"If there is a chance that she can help us survive, then I am going to take it.
They want her dead, so we give them what they want."
"They will kill us anyway," said Vec.
I am captain of this ship. I will not...
My ship, said Vec, his voice suddenly low and dangerous.
He saw Colne's eyes flick to the guard's gun, which he still had in his hands.
My ship, he said again.
The pistol in her hand shook more. He could see the anger and fear moving beneath the skin of her face. He realized that the cacophony of the bridge had dimmed, that most of the crew were watching what was happening. Colne lowered the gun.
Whatever you can do, do it now, he said to Mercedes.
She shook her head.
I can't stop this, she said,
still staring out of the viewport.
We must run. Get us out of this and into the Sunward Gulf.
You said you could help, snarled Vec.
You think they are going to stop?
Said Mercedes, looking at him, and something in her voice held him silent.
If we can get away from this, they will come after us. After you. They just fired into a mass of civilian ships to try to kill us. They will hunt us down even in the middle of this war.
That's insane.
Not in the minds of the people who held me prisoner. To them, this is the battle, and they have the will to see it through. To them, innocence proves nothing.
Then we're dead, breathed Vec.
No, said Mercedes. That is not certain.
Vec looked at her and blinked, and an image rose from memory into his mind's eye. An old boat of wood tossed on a high sea beneath a sky of black clouds and forked lightning. It had been an illustration in a book that he had read when he was small. A real book, of paper, that smelled of strange, earthy scents. A doorway into alien realms for a boy born into the void habitats of Uranus. It had come from a distant world with his mother, and the pictures on its pages had shown him things that he still thought of as truer than the Picts and hollows he had seen of other places. Forests of trees with orange leaves, the sun rising behind snow-capped mountains, and the boat on a sea in a storm. He had come back to that picture of the boat again and again, staring at it, until at last he asked his mother what it meant. She had smiled.
That is us, his mother had said. Our lives, and all we do, are the boat, and the sea is the universe. Sometimes it is calm and seems our friend, there to give us delight or comfort. And sometimes it is a storm that can flip the boat of our lives over, break us and swallow us down. It means that sometimes we are small, and the tides we travel cannot be bargained with or bent to our will. Sometimes we can only hold on and hope that the storm is kind.
What do you need? He asked Mercedes.
I need to send a signal, she said. You said that you sent a signal about me before, on military channels?
Yes, said Vec, frowning.
Send another signal now. Send it on the same channel you sent the last transmission.
The ship bucked beneath them as its engines pushed against the fire-soaked void. A chunk of debris struck their spine and the deck pitched.
What should this signal say?
Asked Vec, as he pulled himself back to his feet.
Just my name and one other word.
What?
Asked Vec, glancing at the prow viewports as the ship dived into a cloud of gas, lit by the flare of more explosions.
Loken, said Mercedes. It should just say, Loken.